Thank you so much for pressing play on another episode of A-Sides. I'm Andy, and for episode 149, I spoke with the immensely talented Ryan Waters. He currently performs and records music with Liv Warfield and also performs with Nancy Wilson as part of Heart. So we talk about both of those parts of his career and previous experiences with both Prince and Sade. I was really excited to talk to Ryan, and it shows because I think I was kind of jumping all over the place, asking him so much stuff between the different aspects of his career. So it's kind of almost non-linear, but I'm so thankful that Ryan was down to talk, and also have to give a huge shout out to Liv Warfield for helping to make this possible. So hopefully you enjoy episode 149 of A-Sides.
Look, it's rock and roll!
And cue music.
I used to do it for the passion, but now the passion is gone. Want me to do it for the money, but it never came along. I try to find a 9-to-5. I suck at doing what I'm told. I ain't really getting better.
Thank you for doing this. And did Liv actually say something to you when you guys were in St. Louis, or did you just like have a feeling I was there? Or
I could just tell that you knew the music, and so I sort of put two and two together. And so kind of halfway through the set, Liv and I were in the back. I was like, "Is that the guy you did the podcast with?" And she said, "Yeah, yeah." And all right, cool. And so then I made sure to come find you after the show.
Oh, all right, because I was just kind of like, I wasn't even expecting you to come out. And then you just walked towards me and you're like, "Hey man, you do the podcast." And I was like, "Oh man." I was like, "What, did you read minds or something?"
I wish I could, I could claim some sort of, superiority of mind that I was able to find you through the ether, but it was a little simpler than that.
Oh.
I just put two and two together, basically. Not that many people know our stuff, so I figured since you were down there, you knew some of the lyrics, and I was like, "Wait a minute, this isn't just a normal guy who just walked in."
I'm not really sure how to start, actually, because to tell you the truth, I had written down notes before, and I think I mentioned that. But then it was like Friday morning. I wanted to go look up because I wasn't sure that song that you guys play, "The More Things Change."
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was like, what song is that? Is that an old song? Is that a new song? Or is that something you guys have worked up? So I tried to do some searching before work, and I landed on something on SoundCloud where you and Liv were doing it together, just acoustic. And then it took me down huge like rabbit hole of your own solo stuff. So all day at work on Friday, I was absolutely like hooked on your album from 2013, "No Moral to This Tale." I listen to that, I swear, like all day at work.
Thanks. You're one of the few people that can say that.
Oh. So you put that out in 2013, and you had a couple other albums before that, but is that all you on there? Obviously playing guitar and singing, but did you do everything?
Yeah, I kind of came into music through, you know, I never set out to kind of be a session guy or a hired gun. I didn't even know that that was really available to me as a career when I was starting out. I just, you know, I come from a small town and I just grew up playing in bands and writing songs. I thought that's what you did. You know, I didn't know that there was this whole industry set up around music that I could explore. So I thought all there was to do was to write songs and, you know, get in a band and maybe get a record deal or whatever. So, you know, that's really what I came up doing. And Prince has always kind of been he's kind of the North Star. He's always been the aspiration ever since I was 12. You know, he's been the cat. You know, he made his records and he played everything. And I kind of started on piano, and there was being in bands, there was always kind of drum sets around, and my bands would rehearse at my house. So over time, passively learned to play all these instruments good enough to sort of, you know, do these sort of what started on 4-track. And then as Pro Tools and technology started, you know, sort of empowering those of us with, you know, with the ambition to make recordings at home, you know, it just the technology caught up, and I made a few records. And most of that was kind of before I was making a living. And since, you know, most of my writing has gone towards the projects I'm involved with. So, you know, with Liv, or I've been in other bands. Yeah. So I don't do so much solo stuff anymore. It's more sort of project-based collaboration now.
Yeah, I got some questions to ask about those other projects too. But with this one, that No Moral to This Tale, you were just writing songs and picking up instruments as you went. So is that song Everything's Been Done Better Before? That's basically like you, right? It's like autobiographical.
That is all me. Yeah. Yes. Even, you know, with drums, I have studio tricks. I'm a decent drummer. I can, you know, I can kind of get through a verse. So, you know, the way I track my drums and keyboards too, I'm proficient enough to sort of get a part down. So, you know, the studio magic just kind of allows me to, you know, I'm good enough to kind of get one little bit and chop it up and, you know, make a track. So that's how I would make my records. We did play I had a band that played some of those songs live back in 13, 14. But that was actually the record that started Liv and I's collaboration. There's a song called Blackbird on there that was,
yeah,
that she kind of took for her record, and that was on The Unexpected, and that was one where she just kind of needed more songs, and we had just kind of reconnected and started working together again. So yeah, that record you picked a good point, because that was definitely kind of a transitional record into this newest part of my career, I think.
Oh, awesome. I thought it was really good musically, but then lyrically, like, I thought all the lyrics were like relatable. Like I said, with that,
if I sort of pride myself on anything, or if I, even as a guitar player, it's just, I don't really consider myself a guitar player. There's so many better guitar players than me. It's always just been something I did to facilitate writing songs, and I've done it my whole life. So I know I'm pretty good at it, but it's not something that I've sort of footwork in or really pride myself on. But lyrics are something that I do take a lot of pride in, and it's something that I think about a lot. So I appreciate the acknowledgement there.
Well, yeah, for sure. It also kind of spoke to me too, because I feel that same way even with podcasting and stuff. Like, I don't know, I didn't think I could be like a host of a show. I still don't think I could be a host, but I guess I still do it. I keep doing it because I like talking to people you or Liv, or just people that like music, that are like-minded.
Absolutely, man. And that's, you know, so much in life. It's sometimes there's just really nothing to it but to do it, you know, and you get better at things, and you're like, oh, I didn't even realize I was good at something. And then people start acknowledging you for it. And, you know, that's kind of how you can let life happen to you. And it's a beautiful thing to sort of find a lane and develop a skill that you didn't even really know you had, or one that you wouldn't have otherwise developed on your own, you know. So.
you mentioned performing with Liv and getting hooked up with her around that same time. But so I was reading up on you, how you've joined other like projects and stuff, like even with Nancy Wilson and stuff. How did you get introduced to Liv? Was it out when you guys were out in like the Seattle, Portland area?
It's a pretty crazy story, Liv and I's origins. You know, I'm a bit older than Liv. I was in my 20s. I grew up in Portland. I grew up in Oregon,
yeah.
Actually in Salem, which is just south of Portland. And then moved to Portland after high school and kind of found my footing there. And then I moved to New York. I was able to, you know, I kind of made my way and paid my dues, and I got the Sade gig in 2000. I came home to visit my folks for Christmas, and Liv went to college in Portland, and we kind of had a mutual friend, and she got my email address, and this was back in, you know, like I said, 2000. I think it was the kind of Christmas time, 2000. And we just kind of started talking, and she had aspirations to get into music, but she had zero experience. She kind of came up in a pretty conservative family and hadn't really sort of put herself out there. And all she was doing was singing in karaoke clubs. And she asked if I would come check her out at a karaoke, you know, bar. And
yeah,
like, yeah, sure. You know, she was kind of raw, but essentially the Liv that you see now was what I saw in karaoke club. And I, as you can imagine, my jaw hit the floor. And I was like, look, you need to get out of a karaoke room. And I took her to, you know, a couple of the clubs that I knew, and I introduced her to a few musicians. And then, you know, I went back to New York and got on with my life and kind of watched from afar. And I mean, she had a band within weeks, and she kind of took over Portland. And
oh, damn.
And she made a record in, I don't know, probably the early aughts, 04, 05-ish. I had nothing to do with that record. It was just all made with her friends in Portland. But I did get to do some shows with her on the East Coast. I was living in Atlanta at the time, and we worked together a bit for that record. But then she got the Prince gig, and, you know, we went our separate ways again, and then reconnected in 2012.
Oh, damn. I didn't realize you guys went all the way back that far.
Yeah, we go way back.
24 years, 23 years?
Yeah, exactly.
Damn.
We're coming up on 25 years of knowing each other. And
yeah,
it's so great. You know, I have a lot of pride with what Liv's kind of been able to do. I take a lot of satisfaction, like, being one of the first ones to kind of see it. And the fact that we still work together, and, you know, we're family at this point. And it's far and away kind of the most satisfying creative, you know, relationships I've had in my career, in my life.
Yeah, she had a lot of good things to say about you, like, too, the few times I've spoken to her.
Yeah, we've been through a lot together, to say the least.
So you said, too, that you are from Oregon, and then you moved to New York, and then you went to Atlanta, and then now you were telling me that you're in Seattle, so you're out in the Northwest again, Pacific Northwest. Do you prefer East Coast or West Coast?
Good question. I grew up, you know, on the West Coast. When I don't get to spend much time here, I always seem to miss it. But, you know, I think I kind of really found myself in New York, and I spent the most time in Atlanta, and a lot of my closest friends are still kind of East Coast folks. And I find, as I get older, I relate less to the people on the West Coast. Most of my friendships are East Coast folks. I don't know. I just think, as Americans, we have the ability to move so easily and to really get a change of scenery. And I've always tend to get the itch to every 10 years or so to kind of uproot myself. And so there's really no rhyme or reason to it. I think I just like to move.
I've always been like Midwest, like Liv's actually from Peoria. And that's where I'm at. Peoria area.
Yeah, she's a Midwest girl. Yep.
Yeah.
You're from Peoria. Okay. So that makes sense then.
Yeah, because you guys played here. It's been like 2 years now, but that was the first time I saw Liv.
Yeah, yeah. So did you see us at the, when we kind of did that show at the theater?
Yeah, the show where I saw you guys 2 years ago, it was like more like a cathedral, like a church. and they started doing shows there.
That's what I'm talking about. Yep, I remember that show.
And speaking of that City Winery show where I just saw you guys recently, that was kind of like, I wasn't expecting that. The table was literally like right next to the stage.
Yeah, you were right up on the stage.
Do you guys play like a lot of those venues, the City Wineries?
We do and we don't. We did, we kind of go way back with City Winery, actually. We did some shows back in 2013, actually, with Prince. We did a couple shows in New York, and those were, as you can imagine, those were huge kind of events, and we're actually kind of put City Winery on the map a little bit. They were kind of struggling at that location, and that show really kind of up their stock quite a bit. So we go way back with City Winery. So they always treat us well, and they have great rooms. So we do like doing the shows, but it is, you know, gigs like that. There's a few kind of around the country and in the world. With Liv, we kind of, you know, because we're essentially a rock band, but we kind of get put in a lot of, you know, R&B rooms, and because we can go, the band can go a lot of places, especially with the cats we have in the band now. So, you know, we'll play a lot of jazz festivals or, you know, sort of dinner clubs where they're expecting, you know, a little less, you know, ruckus on stage. But yeah, every now and again, we'll have, you know, sort of the dinner crowd where we get to rock out on people's plates of salmon.
Yeah, they probably weren't expecting Liv to get down off the stage. And
yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah. She's a disruptor in situations like that, which they usually love. And even that St. Louis show you saw, yeah, you could really tell that people were not used to that type of a show being in that room.
Yeah.
But, you know, we get a kick out of it. It's kind of, we like to shake things up a little bit.
Catch me if you can. I'm out of here. We in love. Please don't stop us now. We out of here. Oh. Oh, 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 oh. What's the plan? What we gonna do? Save the world, honey. Let's get the parachutes on. Oh, 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 oh.
Well, you mentioned Prince a few times, and I noticed at that show in St. Louis, you have a dog tag that was around your neck, but then you also have Prince's symbol as a necklace.
Oh, yeah. Very perceptive.
Oh, I basically right up in your face almost by your mic stand.
Yeah, you had a good vantage point, that's for sure.
I got a question about that. Like, you work pretty closely with Prince, and so what is the biggest lesson that you learned from him?
I don't know if I could distill it down to one singular takeaway lesson, but you know, just the experience. Like I said, he was, you know, Prince was my hero. I was for Liv to kind of bring me into that world. It was the thrill of my life, and it was kind of the perfect situation for me. In that I didn't have to work directly for Prince. Like, I wasn't in his band. I think that would have been overwhelming for me. So the fact that I kind of got to work in the capacity of being in Liv's band, and he sort of oversaw and produced the project those few years that we were kind of promoting The Unexpected. You know, I think it was just watching him work and kind of getting to see behind the curtain a little bit, just see him be a musician. I was around at the time where he had this, you know, this huge 12-13 piece horn section, and I would see him kind of come up with horn arrangements on the spot that even some of the cats in the horn section were like, man, I don't think this is going to work. And then when it come together, it was magic. There was a couple moments where he would come up on stage and kind of dictate to really everybody what to play. And we would all kind of be like, all right, we'll try it. You know, inevitably it was perfect. It was just, you know, he would come up with parts and transitions and arrangements that were just seemed inaccessible to anybody else. And to him, it made sense. And it was just what was right. And he was always right. He was amazing. He was just an amazing cat. There's just no other way to put it. It was really just observing him, even just the way he was with people, the way he was with music. He was an amazing, amazing dude.
Yeah, that's awesome. You got to experience that and like be a part of that.
It will always be treasured. And guys like that don't come around very often. And I think it's just one of those things that happened. It'll never happen again. You know, that time of music and the people and the personalities it created are, I'm just thankful that I was alive to see it.
You also worked with before that, and you'd mentioned her too, Sade. What attracted you to work with her? Because it seems kind of a totally different style of music from what you play now and even what you kind of did on your solo stuff.
Yeah, it is. I've always like been a huge, huge fan of that band. They had a record called Love Deluxe, came out in the early 90s, and the tour that they did for that show, it aired on PBS, and I kind of had a friend and a mentor in New York that I met, and I asked him, like, what's the best show you've ever seen? And he said, believe it or not, I saw Sade, and it just blew my mind. They're far and away the best live band. I'm like, really? Okay. That show came on PBS, and I taped it, and it changed my life. I'd never seen, like, a band. They were just so, it just seemed like the coolest bunch of people. You know, I was living in Portland. I was a kid. I had no access. They seemed like aliens to me, but they just seemed like the coolest people. And the band was so good, and just like they played their parts, and it sort of took the record and better than the record somehow, you know, and not many bands are able to do that. So when I moved to New York, I was really, that was kind of the mindset I went there with. I want to find musicians like this. I lucked up into I was in a rock band with a cat who had a martial arts class with a guy called Stuart Matthewman, who's the sax player and kind of the main songwriter along with Sade in the band. And he came and saw me play a couple times, and just kind of out of the blue. Like I said, I've never been a hired gun, or I didn't even know that you could be a session guy or anything like that. And he just kind of called me out of the blue and was like, hey, man, want to do some TV shows with us? I said, yeah, absolutely. That started my career. It completely spoiled me to music because she specifically, but they all kind of follow suit. They're just, it's an anomaly in this business. They're the greatest people. They're really well adjusted. They don't give a fuck about being famous. They're just really good, solid people. I'm so thankful to be associated with them. And I hope we get to do another tour here, which, you know, we'll see.
But oh, awesome.
It's in the realm of possibility.
That's one artist, Sade, that I remember that, like, Love Deluxe, the early 90s, and it was like, my mom had that CD, and she would like play it all the time, and I didn't like it, but now here we are, like, I was probably like 8 years old then, and now I just turned 40, and I actually dig Sade now, so it's kind of funny how that kind of, you appreciate stuff as you get older.
Exactly, there is a level of, I don't know, sophistication to it that, you know, an eight-year-old kid probably wouldn't dig, but as we get older. Yeah, she's amazing, and the band is it's great. And, you know, they, because of the fact that they're not so concerned about the, you know, the fame and the glitz and the glamour of it all, they take really long vacations. But I am looking forward to and hoping we get to do another one here.
Yeah, that would be cool. You also have another tour. Like, I think I'm kind of jumping all over the place, but you got a tour this year with Heart. I saw that you had played with Nancy, and then you guys did the Roadcase Royale, and now you're a part of her band with Heart.
Nancy, you know, I've worked pretty closely with her for the last 8 years or so.
Yeah.
Liv and I opened up the band we had at the time opened up for Heart in 2015 at the Hollywood Bowl. You know, Liv and Nancy kind of hit it off then. So when Nancy wanted to kind of start a project, she called Liv and I. We did a record, tried to give that band a go, Roadcase Royale. No one seems to care what we have to say. It's gotta change. There's gotta be a better way. Crushed the lines with protest signs as we're crying about hateful minds unheard, unseen. made a record we were really proud of and got out on the road and got a support slot opening up for Bob Seger on one of his last tours. And it was looking really good. And then Bob had some health issues and the tour got canceled, and it kind of really took the wind out of the sails of that band and that project. And then when Nancy kind of shifted her focus back to Heart in 2019, she was nice enough to kind of ask me to join. And I think she really wanted kind of some of what she'd been working on to be represented in the new manifestation of Heart. So I kind of served that purpose. Kind of the same dynamic set in, you know. Then of course, after that, the pandemic hit, and we, you know, obviously we're no exception. The whole world got everything sort of turned upside down on us. And during that time, I worked on a record with Nancy, and we did some more shows, and she was always kind of working towards getting back to Heart with her sister, and same kind of thing where Nance kind of brought me in to sort of represent what she'd been working on, and then Anne kind of has her guys, and we kind of came together and did a few shows right before the new year, and it was great. Guys are fantastic. Band sounds great. Anne sounds amazing.
It seems like from talking to you now, like you get to play, somehow the stars align or something. You get to play with your heroes. You got to play with Prince and Sade, and then
I've been very lucky.
You even told me when we spoke in person, you're like, oh, I love Cheap Trick. And that's who's going out on the road with Heart this year.
Dude, so. Yeah, I'm a huge Cheap Trick fan. And I assume, being kind of where you're from in the world, I assume you it's almost, you have to be. Actually, it's really funny because the first time I met Nancy and we sat down, she flew us out to see a Heart show in 2016. Mm-hmm. And flew Liv and I out, and Cheap Trick was the opening act on that tour. So the first meeting we had was a dinner with, it was myself and Liv, Nancy and her husband, and Rick and Robin from Cheap Trick.
Oh, wow.
Sitting down at a restaurant. And so as you can imagine, I was like, is this happening? Essentially, Nancy kind of pitched the idea to Liv and I while Rick and Robin are sitting there, and they were kind of involved in the process. Like, they saw a video, you know, Nancy showed a YouTube clip of Liv and I playing, and they were like, yeah, great. So we kind of got their endorsement even before the band existed. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, so I love Cheap Trick, man. They've always been one of my favorite bands, and they just have a, you know, the songs, the show, the image, you know, everything. I just think that they do it so well, and there are a few rock bands that have the staying power and are just as fucking cool as that band. So I'm so looking forward to hanging out with them a little bit this summer. It's gonna be great.
I even just talked to Dax. I recorded an episode of this with him like a couple of weeks ago. I'm a big fan of Alice Cooper, and he's got a thing out in Arizona, the Christmas pudding that he puts on, and it kind of goes to his.
Actually, Nancy went out for that, I think, was this year. But yeah, I'm familiar.
And you're right. Yeah, she was there performing in December at the last one. I was just waiting in line out in the lobby, and I noticed Dax was standing there. He said he actually lives there and he golfs with Alice all the time.
That tracks. That totally makes sense. I met him very briefly, very quickly, so I look forward to hopefully getting the hang a little bit.
Speaking of the Road Case Royale, I remember that kind of a short-lived band from years ago, but I never bought the album. And then after we talked this week, I went and bought it online. So I wanted to ask you about it. There isn't any songwriting credits like listed, like usually, because I usually look through the liner notes and stuff. But were you involved with any of the writing process for that too?
Yeah, I definitely was. I have to remind myself of the tunes on that record. It was a pretty collaborative process. I wrote quite a bit on that record, if I remember right.
Yeah, there were two that were Heart covers. You guys kind of reworked Even It Up and These Dreams, but the rest seem to be, the other eight seem to be Road Case Royale songs.
Yep. Yeah, in fact, one of them, there's a song called Not Giving Up. That was a song I wrote, brought in. Liv and I had actually been doing that one. It was going to be a Liv Warfield song. And then there's a song called Insaniac.
Oh, yeah.
That was a song that I brought in. That was kind of my riff. Liv and Nancy wrote some lyrics to it.
Yeah, that one's kind of heavy. Yeah, like, and it's more modern rock or something.
Yeah, that was definitely the rocker of the on the record. Yeah, it's interesting. Man, I haven't thought about this record in a long time. But yeah, it was a really fun band. I really wish it could have had a longer life. All the guys in the band, it was just fantastic players, and it was a really, really great time and a great vibe. I'm really happy we got to make the record, but it's kind of a drag, but fun looking back. I haven't looked back at these tunes, and a lot of memories just came up. So,
yeah. At least it still exists out there. It's for people to find.
Exactly,
it.
Right? Exactly. Yep.
Yes, you can hold on. Hold on to my hand.
What would have been your first album that you bought when you were a kid?
I mean, obviously, it's a pretty varied list of influences. I grew up, you know, I'm an only child, and I kind of grew up in a pretty isolated, small town, kind of conservative. So I wasn't exposed to a whole lot of stuff. My dad was into, you know, a lot of kind of older country and older soul and R&B. He loved Ray Charles and Willie Nelson and you know, stuff like that. And Chuck Berry. I think Chuck Berry was probably my first real pull into playing guitar.
Oh, cool.
And it was, you know, just stuff on the radio. You know, I love rock and roll and, you know, shit like that, that just really sort of perked my ear up to the guitar. Once the 80s kicked in, and it was, like I said, it was Prince, Van Halen too, you know, I didn't get too hair metal-y, but I did. I loved Guns N' Roses and some of the guitar bands, and, you know, started getting in Led Zeppelin and stuff from the 70s. But it was really Prince and then Stevie Ray Vaughan. I really got into the blues. There's a local blues artist named Curtis Salgado, and he was kind of an early mentor of mine. I saw him, like, when I was in high school. I'd just kind of go all over. I'd follow him wherever to kind of go see him. And he was nice enough to kind of show me his record collection and, you know, point me in the right direction. So I really started with just a lot of blues stuff and just really immersed in that. That movie Crossroads came out in the 80s. And,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
That hit me right in the, you know, that I was just the right age to have that really hit me just square in the chest. I absorbed, you know, a lot of that blues stuff. And then I kind of came up playing classical guitar too. And I was kind of on track to get a classical guitar scholarship and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, the blues and being in rock bands and all that kind of, you know, changed my trajectory quite a bit. And yeah. Instead of going to college, I, you know, jumped in a van with my rock band and just got started. and that's essentially what I'm still doing. It's really all I know how to do.
If you said it was kind of a conservative area, like, how'd you discover Prince? Was it like MTV back then, or?
The conservatism that I was surrounded with, I definitely, it inspired the rebel in me, and I definitely sort of rebelled against it. So, you know, seeing Prince on the MTV or, you know, just anything that was counter to, I was immediately drawn to. And, you know, I got into, in my 20s, that was more, you know, I got a lot into punk rock and just, and even hip hop. I got really into, you know, Public Enemy and Boogie Down Productions and just anything that was like, you know, kind of sticking it to the man and allowed me to sort of explore, you know, alternative ideas. That was really attractive to me when I was young. Still is, but, you know, as a kid, you really chase that stuff. So, yeah, I think that's what the initial draw to Prince was.
You do have, like, a wide I guess, I don't know what word to use, like palette for music, because I've even seen, and I took notice on the recent Live album, there's a picture of you and you're wearing a Clash shirt.
One of, if not my favorite bands ever.
Hell yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And there you go. That speaks directly to that, you know, what I'm talking about. It's, they were that band to me that had, you know, they're a punk band, but had great melodies. You know, they were activists and rebels. And then they also had these great songs and sort of this sort of rootsy reggae thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, Joe Strummer is just the coolest fucking guy ever. You know, so they're top of the mountain for me as far as, you know, just what a band should be. And, you know, they were in it for the right reasons. And sure, it was a little pretentious or, you know, whatever, but that really appealed to me. And I still love the Clash. No man's born with a living soul.
Appealed to me too. I was in high school, like later in the 90s, and I somehow, a guy in one of my classes told me about the Clash, and I'd heard those songs, but I didn't really know who it was, because obviously,
yeah,
like you mentioned, yeah, Joe Strummer, but then there was Mick Jones that sings some of the songs too, so I had no idea it was the same band.
Yeah, Mick Jones is kind of, he's become my favorite part of the Clash, but you know, Joe was the initial rope in. But it's, I think, like, even with Sade, the, like, those guys, my appreciation of the Clash was really solidified in getting to know those guys. They, you know, I thought they were this great R&B band, and they're like, no, they grew up as punks, you know, because the UK back then, it was, that's just what it was. They all wanted to be a Clash. And then in the early 80s, there was sort of this influx of soul and sort of R&B that the English kids were checking out. And so that's why they started the band. But, you know, all the guys in that band, they just wanted to be in the Clash. So so during soundcheck and, you know, on Sade shows, mostly we're just playing Clash tunes.
Oh, cool.
Not what you would expect.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, man, he kind of like blew me away with that.
Little known fact.
Yeah. So I got some other like music questions for you too. When is the last time that you felt excited or inspired? I guess that's not really a musical thing, but I just wrote it down.
It's a good question. Yeah, it can definitely apply to music and just about anything else. I'll tell you what, that answer would have come a lot quicker, you know, pre-pandemic. I don't think I've ever had to struggle with finding inspiration and motivation as much as I have, you know, in these last few years. You know, musicians, we really went through a time of, really, I was just resigned to never playing live again. You know, it was an existential sort of situation for us. So finding inspiration, I definitely had to sort of look more within, and I sort of in the, we all sort of figure out how to get going in life again after the pandemic. None of us really still having made heads or tails of just what we went through and what we all lived through collectively. So I find inspiration now in simpler things, just getting up and having another day, and just sort of, I think my ambitions are simpler. I it's not about sort of changing the world or writing a number one song, or literally just something to say, something that you feel like you need to express, and find some simple way. It can be a 20 minute rock epic, or it can just be a little 2-word poem, you know, to just sort of stay active and stay creative. That's kind of been the motivation for me. The world is, you know, everything's upside down and topsy turvy, and it's hard to really look outside for inspiration so much without sort of getting preachy and didactic. So I try to just kind of look inward and keep it simple. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's the best I got.
It actually does, because like on the Liv Warfield album that you guys put out last summer, you had a song on there, Maybe They'll Take Your Picture, and that almost kind of, you wrote it, and it kind of...
I did, yeah.
It kind of sounds, I don't know what I'm taking away from it, is it kind of sounds like some of those feelings maybe during the pandemic or getting back to living your life and don't worry about what other people are doing. That's what I took away from it, like social media.
Absolutely, there you go. Yeah, that's definitely where that one came from. I don't like to sort of ascribe a meaning or say, you know, what the song means. I don't even know. It just, they just sort of come to you. But
yeah,
it's definitely one of those ones that I think the spirit of that one was born out of those struggles from the pandemic and just, you know, what I learned through it all.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a tune. We, the groove of that we'd kind of been jamming around with in the band, and we had tried a few different things, and when we were making the record, we just kind of started messing around with that groove, and it kind of had a little vibe to it. So I took it home and, you know, wrote those lyrics, and it seems to have worked.
Well, yeah, it did work, man. It makes you want to boogie, like feel good song.
Kind of. It is. It gets your ass out of your seat.
So with music, do you collect music still, or like a vinyl or CDs, or how do you even listen to it? Are you like a streaming guy?
All of the above, really. I mean, streaming is so convenient, and, you know, to have, you know, every bit of sort of recorded music in history at your fingertips, in your pocket all the time is amazing. You know, I remember a time of, you know, back in the 90s, getting on a plane with my little CD player and you know, you had to pick which CDs to bring with you on the plane, and inevitably you would forget the one you really wanted. And so, you know, I love it, but it's definitely the downside has been sort of a cheapening of the experience of listening to music, and it doesn't have that sort of same level of gravitas and reverence that we used to give music back in the day. So yeah, I do still, I have all my vinyls. A lot of my old records have stayed with me. I listen to them still pretty regularly. I still think it's the best way to listen to music, but it's a pain in the ass. You know, you gotta flip the record and you can't travel with it. So, yeah. You know, I do still do subscribe to my streaming service, and that's probably 80 to 90% of the music I listen to is in earbuds on my phone. But I do still have a record player, and I do still sit down and put a record on.
So all the moves that you've made, you've still kept your music collection?
Yeah, right. Some has fallen by the wayside, definitely. It's a smaller collection than I remember it being when I was a kid. But yeah, all my sort of cool old valuable records that I've always wanted to keep, I've still got most of them.
Cool. But I got one last question for you.
Cool, fire away.
If you could only listen to one artist or band the rest of your life, who would it be?
Oh.
I only wanted to ask that, I guess, just because I was doing an exercise class recently, and the instructor, she actually posed that question. And so I was like, oh, well, I'll just write that down and ask you.
That's a good question. It's desert island type of the hypotheticals are always. I don't know. Let's see. Probably Ray Charles. If I had to find myself going back to those records more than anything, and his just the way he plays and his voice, that is the anchor for me. And I feel like if I didn't have that to go back to, I wouldn't have that. I don't know if there's one particular record I would take with me, but yeah, Ray Charles.
Awesome answer.
Yeah, I'll go with Ray. Brother Ray. Yeah. He's coming with me. But that's fun to think about. I may change my mind, but I feel pretty comfortable with that.
It's Ray Charles.
In this moment right now, yeah. Ray Charles it is.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, man, and
it was my pleasure. It was really fun. I really appreciate you you know, wanted to. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I don't get to do many. So this is actually really fun. Oh. So thank you.
I would think people would be hitting you up.
Yeah,
man.
Not many people have. I really appreciate it.
Well, yeah, man. Yeah, if you ever want to do like a follow up sometime too, I mean, in the future.
Yeah, say the word, man. You got my number. Hit me up. Mm-hmm. Especially now that I know you're a Peoria dude. You know, it's you're in the family now too. Yeah, Peoria is kind of become a bit of a second home with, you know, being involved with Liv.
Yeah, she's back in Illinois, isn't she?
Yeah, she's in Chicago. And, you know, part of it is to be close to her family. And and she's working in Chicago quite a bit, too.
So well, awesome.
Home for her now.
All right, man.
But yeah, man, hit me up anytime. We'll do a follow-up as, you know, maybe after the Heart Tour or something. I can tell you some stories.
Okay, cool. Yeah, or we can dive into more of your favorite artists or something, too. More of your songs.
Anytime. Yep.
Hopefully I'll catch you and Liv.
A wealth of information out there.
All right, well, have a good afternoon, dude.
Do the same. I appreciate you.
I do not recognize myself anymore. No longer feel the same as I felt before. I'm never coming back.